Chapter 20. The event horizon around Villeneuve's Revenge dissolved the instant the starship expanded out to its full 48-meter size. Solar wind and emaciated light from New California's distant sun fell on the dark silicon hull which its disappearance exposed. Short-range combat sensors slid out of their jump recesses with smooth animosity. Metallic black tubers inset with circular gold mirror lenses. They scoured a volume of space 500 kilometers across, hungry for a specific shape. Data streams from the sensors sparkled through Eric Thakrar's mind, a rigid symbolic language written in monochromic light. Cursors chased through the vast, constantly reconfiguring displays, closing in on an explicit set of values like circling photonic sculpture vultures. Radiation, mass, and laser returns slotted neatly into their parameter definition. The crystal moon materialized out of the fluttering binary fractals, hanging in space 260 kilometers away. An interplanetary cargo ship, 80 meters long. A cylindrical life support capsule at one end, silver foil cloaked tanks, and dull red fusion drive tube clusters at the other. Thermodump panels formed a rough collar on the outside of the environmental engineering deck just below the life support capsule. Communication dishes jutted out of a grid tower on the front of it. The ship's midsection was a hexagonal gantry supporting 5 rings of standard cargo pods, some of them plugged into the environmental deck via thick cables and hoses. A slender 25-meter flame of hazy blue plasma burnt steadily from the fusion tube, accelerating the crystal moon at an unvarying 60th of a G. It had departed Tihama asteroid 5 days ago with its cargo of industrial machinery and microfusion generators, bound for the Ukiah asteroid settlement in the outer asteroid belt Dana, which orbited beyond the gas giant Sacramento. Of the star's 3 asteroid belts, Dana was the least populated. Traffic this far out was thin. Crystal Moon's sole link to civilization and Navy protection was its microwave communication beam focused on Ukiah, 320 million kilometers ahead. Eric's neural mnemonics reported that pattern lock was complete. He commanded the X-ray lasers to fire. 250 kilometers away, the crystal moon's microwave dishes burst apart into a swirl of aluminium snowflakes. A long brown scar appeared on the forward hull of the life support capsule. God, I hope no one was in the cabin below. Eric tried to push that thought right back to the bottom of his mind. Straying out of character even for a second could quite easily cost him his life. They'd drilled that into him enough times back at the academy. There was even a behavioral consistency program loaded into his neural mnemonics to catch any wildly inaccurate reactions. But flinches and sudden gasps could be equally damning. The Villeneuve's Revenge triggered its fusion drive and accelerated in towards the stricken cargo ship at 5.5 G's. Eric sent another 2 shots from the X-ray cannon squirting into the crystal moon's fusion tube. Its drive flame died. Coolant fluid vented out of a tear in the casing, hidden somewhere in the deep shadows on the side away from the sun, the fountain fluorescing grey-blue as it jetted out from behind the ship.
"Nice going, Eric," André Duchamp commented.
He had the secondary fire control program loaded in his own neural mnemonics. If the newest crew member hadn't fired, he could have taken over within milliseconds. Despite Eric's performance in the Catalina bar, André had a single nagging doubt. After all, O'Flaherty was one of their own, after a fashion, and eliminating him didn't require many qualms, no matter who you were. But firing on an unarmed civil ship...
"You have earned your place on board," André said silently.
He cancelled his fire control program. Villeneuve's Revenge was 120 kilometers from the crystal moon when André turned the starship and started decelerating.
The hangar doors began to slide open. He started to whistle against the push of the heavy G-force.